Okay, we're beginning here, 13 lines down on the top of Yud Zayin Amud Aleph by the two dots. The Mishnah discussed what was the relationship between the Anshei Mishmar and the Beit Av to these fast days for the rain. As an aside, the Mishnah also mentions other rules that differentiate between the Anshei Mishmar and the Anshei Ma'amad. And one of those was, the Anshei Mishmar mutarim lishtot yayin balelot, the participants of the Mishmar of that week are allowed to drink wine at night, avalo biyamim, but not during the day. Anshei Beit Av, when it comes to those that are the subset of the Mishmar, the Beit Av, lo bayom velo balayla. They can't drink not in the morning, not at night. And then the Mishnah continues, which we'll get to further on in today's daf, which is Anshei Mishmar. Anshei Ma'amad asurim lesaper l'mechabes. They're not allowed to take haircuts or launder during the week of their avodah. Ubechamishi, on Thursday at the tail end of their week in the Mikdash, mutarim yipnei kvod Shabbat. They can do all these preparations in anticipation of Shabbat. As Rashi noted, that's because most people don't do it on Friday because it's too much of a burden. It's too much going on in that day. So they do it on Thursday. And therefore, they're allowed to prepare on Thursday for the upcoming Shabbat. And the Mishmar now is going to discuss what are these issues with regards to the Mishmar and the Beit Av. So Tanu Rabbanan, Mipnei Mamru, Anshei Mishmar Mutarim Lishtot Yayim Balelot. Why is it that the Anshei Mishmar are allowed to drink wine at night? Aval lo biyamim, but not during the days. Shema Tichbad Avoda Al Anshei Beit Av, because maybe the Avoda of the Beit Av of that day will bog down, meaning that they'll have too much to do and they won't be able to handle it. And they'll have to call in the reserves. They'll come and help them out, and therefore they are on active call. And since they're on active call, they have to make sure not to have wine, because wine would preclude them from doing avoda in the Mikdash. In order to be on call, they can't drink during the daytime. Why is it with regards to the Beit Av that they can't drink not during the day, not at night? Because that's their day of avodah. So now, with regards to the Mishmarot, we know that there was a cycle of 24 Mishmarot that's mentioned in Tanakh, and the division of the Kohanic families into 24 different groupings, and those groupings assigned to them a week during the year where they used to work. And then they went through a cycle of 24, and then they started again another cycle of 24. Within those Mishmarot, they were broken down into Batei Av. Batei Av are more like family units within the Mishmar. So the Mishmar was a broader unit. Then there are smaller family units within the Mishmar. How many is not clear. Rashi earlier in the Masechta mentioned that there were Shiva Batei Av, that each Mishmar is broken down into seven family units. And then each one of those Batei Av worked one of the days that the Mishmar was assigned to work in the Mikdash. There are others that believe that it was actually broken down into six Batei Av. There were six family units within the Mishmar, and they worked each one of the 6 days of the week, Sunday through Friday. And then on Shabbat, they all worked together, meaning that they came and they pulled their resources together, which would make somewhat sense because that was the turnover between the Mishmarot was midday on Shabbat. So on Shabbat, they worked half of Shabbat in the beginning of their Mishmar, and they worked the beginning of Shabbat and the tail end of their Mishmar. So it's only half of Shabbat, half Shabbat, so it would make sense that that wasn't given to a particular Beit Av, but rather done by the whole Mishmar as a whole. The Rabbeinu Chanan over here quotes from a Tosefta that there were many Mishmarot that were broken down into a different number of Batei Avot, in that there were those that were 4, 3, 9, in that it wasn't anything fixed. Not every Mishmar had the same subdivisions, and based on your subdivision, you were assigned a day either of the week, and that became your day permanently, or you rotated within the Mishmar because there were more Batei Avot than there were days of the week, and so there was some sort of rotation. But despite that fact, the difference between a Mishmar and a Batei Av is that a Batei Av is assigned to a particular day of work, and since they have that particular day of work, they are the ones doing the avoda in the Mikdash. So since they're the ones doing the avoda in the Mikdash, they have to not be drunk. They have to not be intoxicated. And therefore, they can't drink wine on the day they're doing their avoda. They are needed to be in the Mikdash to do the work, even if there are other Kohanim there, but they are the ones that are supposed to be doing the avoda. And not at night, according to most of the Rishonim, and the simple way to read the Gemara, it's the night after the day, which in Kodoshim works that way, that unlike the way it works halachically, that the night precedes the day, with Kodoshim, the night succeeds the day. And therefore, the korbanot of that day, the residual of those korbanot that weren't put on the mizbeach yet on the day, are allowed to be put on all night afterwards. And therefore, that same Beit Av that was working during the day works at night. So they can't drink wine during the day, and they can't drink wine at night because they're going to be doing avoda in the Mikdash. On the other hand, the Bnei HaMishmar, who are on call as backup to the Beit Av that's working on that particular day, so since they're on call during the day, they don't know what's going to happen. They don't know what the quantity of korbanot or the amount of avoda that's going to come, and therefore they need to make sure that they're on call and ready to join the Beit Av in order to fill in or to help them out where they need. But at night already, by the time they get to night, they have a sense of what was put on the Mizbeach during the day and how much work will be needed at night. And since they already have that available to them, that information, they can free their B'nai Mishmar from being on call because the Beit Av knows whether they can handle it or not. If they can't handle it, then their B'nai Mishmar know already that they can come and they can't drink wine. That's the way that most Rishonim read it. The Rambam in Hilchot Biyat HaMikdash in Perek Aleph there suggests that the night is actually the night before. And that is the reason that the Beit Av can't drink the wine the night before is because maybe they'll wake up hungover the next morning and not be able to do the avoda in the Mikdash. B'nai Mishmar are only on call. They don't actually have to get up in the morning to do the avoda, and therefore they could drink the night before, and if the next morning they're needed, by the time they're needed, they'll already be sober. So that's what the Gemara is describing over here in this Braita. But the reason that it's going through this is because it has implications, broader terms, after the Churban HaBayit, which is Mikan Amru. Kol Kohen Shemakir Mishmarto, any Kohen who knows his Mishmar, meaning of the 24 Mishmarot, Umishmeret Beit Av Shelo, and he knows which Beit Av he belonged to. So he knows not only the Mishmar that he belonged to, but he also knows which family unit within that Mishmar he belonged to. V'yodea Shibatei Avotav Kvuim Sham. And he knows that his Batei Avotav were assigned there. This has many interpretations in the Rishonim. You can see Rashi brings two interpretations over here. So the first one is Yodei Vadai Shibeit Av Shelo Oved B'Mikdash. He knows for sure that his family unit worked in the Mikdash. There were many batei avot or families that did not have an assigned time in the Mikdash or were not assigned the Mikdash. Or Rashi brings Amarli Rabbi Kvuin Shalonit Halel Beit Abshalo. He also knows that his family Yichus is still intact, and he knows that they are still ra'ui for avoda in the Mikdash. There wasn't any problems of halal, no problem of Yichus that would have rendered them invalid for doing avoda in the Mikdash. So that's another possibility as to what it means. The Rabbeinu Kanano, on the other hand, says that within the Batei Avot, there were certain Batei Avot that were assigned a particular day. So not only were they subdivided the Mishmarot into family units, the family units within those groups always worked on a Sunday, or the other family group always worked on a Monday. So that's what it means that they know the Kavua day that their family worked on. So not only do they know which Beit Av they are, but they also know which day of the week they were assigned if their Mishmar did such a thing and assigned it to a particular day. Whereas the Tosfot Reed and the Ritva later on in the Gemara here explain that there were these floating Batei Avot. And these floating Batei Avot were not assigned to any particular Mishmar. And they came in and basically they were filling in, or when there were absentee Batei Avot, or when there was a lot of Avoda and there wasn't sufficient Kohanim that were available. And so those floated around, and it's saying here that they weren't one of those floating Batei Avot. And that's what's meant by that their Batei Avot Kvuim Sham. They had a fixed time or a fixed cycle in which they would perform Avoda in the Mikdash. And Rashi says this whole question, the statement that we're about to make, relates to Bizman Hazeh. You can see that in the Rashi Kohen. He says Bizman Hazeh, and that's the halachot that we're dealing with over here. Although again, if you look in the Rambam in Hilchot Biyat HaMikdash, this Svat Emet is Midayek, that he seems to be indicating that this has application to even when the Beit HaMikdash is extant, for the Kohen who's not present in Yerushalayim, but he does know what his Mishmar is or his Beit Av is and whether they're working on that particular day. So even though he's not present in the Mikdash, he still has to do what is incumbent upon him, not to be drunk and to be prepared for the Avoda in the Mikdash. Whereas Rashi's view is that it's all about Meheri Bane Beit HaMikdash. Maybe the Beit HaMikdash will be rebuilt, and this person will need to be on call in order to serve in the Mikdash. And therefore, if he knows what his Mishmar is, what his Beit Av is, and he's a Beit Av Kavua, then Asur Lishtod Yayim Kol Oto Hayom. On that particular day, when he knows it would have fallen out, he cannot drink wine. So Rashi over here says, Shema Yibane Beit HaMikdash V'tichvada Avoda, that the reason he can't drink that day is because maybe the Beit HaMikdash will be built, and there'll be too much avoda, and you'll have to join in. And the Maharam Mirochenberg points out that that seems to be problematic as a reasoning, because the reason that you can't drink on that day is not because Shema Tichvad Avoda, maybe you'll be on call and be called in. It's because that's your day of avoda. It's actually the day that you need to work. And the Marsha challenges Rashi for exactly that reason. He says what Rashi says doesn't make any sense. That can't be the reason why you can't drink on that particular day. And so the Maharam Mirochenberg rewords or reinterprets Rashi to mean the Havamina would have been that he can't drink all week, which is that he knows which day he works, so that day he can't for sure cannot drink, but maybe the rest of the days of that week he can't drink as well because he's on call with the Mishmar. And that's what Rashi is coming to say. Too low. We don't make a gzeira that you have to worry about the other days. You only have to worry if you know your Beit Av, You only have to worry about that particular day, and we don't worry about the fact that you might be on call on the other days, and then there'll be too much work, and you'll be called in, because you do know the day that you're going to work, and that suffices. We don't extend the gzera beyond that, and that's the meaning of Rashi over here, and that would take away or eliminate the Marsha's question on Rashi. Tosvo does qualify this drinking of wine to say that's only outside of a meal, where it's more intoxicating, but inside a meal where it's not intoxicating, that wouldn't be a problem. But we'll see it in the latter half of the daf, as well as for just being from being sensible, that obviously it depends on how much wine the person's drinking and their ability to hold the alcohol as whether they're classified as intoxicated or not. And being intoxicated, even if you drink wine during the meal, if you drink too much wine, it's going to be problematic in terms of the avoda and the mikdash. Bimakir mishmarto, if he knows which mishmar he's from, one of the 24, bimakir mishmar beit avshalo, but he doesn't know which family unit or subgrouping within his mishmar he's from, yodeish batei avotav kvuyim sham, and he knows that his batei avot were kvuyim sham. So now here it seems to make more sense according to those that said that they were kohanim, that were re'uyim to work in the mikdash, because otherwise how could you say kvuyim sham if by definition he doesn't know his batei avot, so he can't know whether they were kvuyim sham or not. So then that person is a shtrelish lion koloto shabbat. He can't drink wine the entire week of that mishmar, because it's possible that any one of the days during that week that his mishmar was supposed to be present in the mikdash, that he was on call that day, that was his day to work in the subgroupings of the batei avot. So he doesn't know which one it is. He has to abstain from wine that entire week, because according to Rashi, maybe the Beit Mikdash will be rebuilt, and therefore he'll have to work in the mikdash, and he needs to be ready to do that. And since he doesn't know which day of the week it is, he should just abstain from wine for that entire week. Inu makir mishmarto, umishberet beit av shelo. He doesn't know which mishmar he belonged to, doesn't know which beit av he belonged to. Yodei shebatei avotav kvuyim sham, but he knows that his batei avot did serve in the mikdash. And again, here it sounds most like that interpretation that Rashi brought from his Rebbe, that they knew that they were kosher kohanim, and that they actually served in the mikdash. Otherwise, if you think that they knew which day in particular, or they knew they were of the serving batei avot, then it would seem like he should have known more information about which Beit Avi was from and which Mishmar he's from. So then that individual is asur lishtot yain kol hashana. That person can't drink wine the entire year, because it could be that any week in the year is when his Mishmar is on, and he doesn't know which Beit Av, so he doesn't know which day of the week it is. So therefore he's precluded from drinking wine ever, because he might anytime be called up to work in the Mikdash if the Mikdash is rebuilt. Rabbi Omer, Rabbi says, Omer ani, asur lishtayim yoin la'olam, ein ochanami. What you said is correct, and this individual, or this Kohen, can't partake in wine forever. Aval ma'ese, shetakanato, kelkelato, that the rectification is his undoing. So now, this statement of Rabbi is very difficult to understand what exactly it means. It's explained in many different ways. The Gaonim over here simply state is that the Churban HaBayit, which is the great undermining, the great kilkalah, the destruction, takanato, that freedom of this obligation, meaning that they are now to mutarim to drink wine, because the Beit HaMikdash was destroyed. Rashi has a take on that, which is a little bit different, which is that the Churban HaBayit that has gone along for so long and hasn't been rebuilt for such a long duration, therefore that becomes takanato. We already almost have a slight sense of yeush on it, and then we're not going to force the Kohanim to abstain from wine, assuming that the Beit HaMikdash will be rebuilt, because it's been gone for so long, we can't ask these Kohanim to hold on and not drink wine forever. Rabbeinu Chanana over here suggests that this kilkalato, the fact that this individual doesn't know his mishmar and doesn't know his Beit Av, that kilkala is takanato. That's what actually rectifies the situation for him, which is that he doesn't know what his yichus is and doesn't know whether he's going to be approved to work in the mikdash. Therefore, even if the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt, he'll have to sit down in front of a Beit Din and get approval or be verified and approved as a Kohen that can work in the mikdash. And since that will be a delay anyway, and he won't be able to work in the mikdash right away, so it's irrelevant whether he drinks wine or doesn't drink wine, because that's not going to be the factor that allows him to work in the mikdash. There's another obstacle to him working in the mikdash, and that's the fact that he's not yet approved as a Kohen to work in the mikdash. And therefore his kilkalah, his not knowing where he's from, or his yichus, is takanato, that allows him to drink wine all the time. All of these seem to explain the expression in the reverse, which is the kilkala is what brings to the takana. But that's not the way that Rabbi explains it. Rabbi explains it should takanato, kilkalato, that his rectification turns out to be a detriment. And so there are those that suggest that his abstaining from wine will end up being problematic because he won't be able to keep up with it. It's a gzeirah she'en hatzibur yachol la'amod ba, and therefore he's going to fail at it, but then he's going to be amazed. So mutav shu shogegim v'altu mezidim. If he doesn't know the day and he drinks wine every day, then there's an off chance that he hit the day that he was not supposed to drink wine, and that'll be bishogeg. But here if we tell him he's not allowed to drink wine all year round, and then he goes and drinks wine, that's going to lead to him violating b'mezid. So that's takanato kilkalato. The way that I would have explained it is similar to the way the Gemara does it in Daf Samach and Baba Batra with regards to the zecher the churban issues, where the Gemara says that you have to limit the amount that a person does zecher the churban to be a reasonable amount. Because if you do it too far or you go too far with that, it's going to become impossible to live. And so you have to have small things that are zecher the mikdash, not things that are onerous on the individuals, makes it impossible for them to live or to go about a normal life. And that's, I think, the same thing here. Shetakanato, if you force him not to drink wine all year round, kilkalato, it's going to be a mess for him. Number one is that it's going to preclude him from doing many mitzvot that involve wine, including Kiddush Abdallah and other mitzvot where we require a suda and yayin to be koveya. And so that's number one, where takanato, here that you fixed him with regards to being a Kohen and Shema Yibanei Beit HaMikdash, is going to kill Kala, is going to ruin it for other mitzvot. In addition, it's not going to work out to be Zecher HaMikdash because he's not going to be able to live up to that expectation. It's too onerous, and therefore it makes it unreasonable. If it's unreasonable, so takanato, kill Kalato. The fact that it's just too much ends up being the kill Kala in the thing that's going to ruin it or undermine it. And so since it's just too much, we therefore do away with it and say that he doesn't have to abide by this fact that he doesn't drink wine all year round. Amar Abaye, k'man shatu eidna kohane chamro, like whom do the Kohanim today drink wine all the time? Karabi, there's so much on this view of Rabbi, because majority of individuals don't know what their mishmar is, and they don't know what their batei av is. That's one way to explain it. Rashi brings an additional explanation, which is, shema yishtaneh seder mishmarot. Even knowing your mishmar is not a saving grace in this situation, because who knows if the order of Mishmarot is going to be the same in Bayit Shlishi as it was in Bayit Sheni or in Bayit Rishon. B'shema yavdu kulam lechanukata bayit bevat achat. And if you do know your Mishmar, and it is going to be the same, maybe when it comes to the consecration of the new Mikdash, then all the Kohanim will work on that first day, and they will all be called into service. So therefore, everybody is captured by this problem. And given that, there's a reason to be mekil. And that might possibly be the explanation of takanato kilkalato, which is that the fact that you're going to now make all the kohanim abstain from wine, that makes no sense anymore. And that's kilkalato, that undermines, or that by itself undermines the takana, and therefore we don't drink. But that what Abaye is saying is, Rabbi, as opposed to the chachamim, would disagree with Rabbi. So it's clear, according to the chachamim, kohanim cannot drink wine, whereas according to Rabbi, they can drink wine. And Abaye is saying the practice of individuals to drink wine is based on this shita of Rabbi. Now, the Rabbeinu Hanano on the Amud Bet has an interesting statement about this, because he says that Rava says to his wife that he knows about Abaye that he doesn't drink wine. And Abaye, we know from the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, was from Beit Eli, was a Kohen. And so the Rabbeinu Hanano suggests, based on that Gemara in Ketubot, that Abaye said this to justify the practice of other Kohanim, but he personally did not abide by Rabbi's position, and he held like the Chachamim, that you weren't allowed to drink wine, and that's why Abaye never drank wine, is because he was a Kohen, and he did not subscribe to Rabbi, but justifying, or being Melamed Zchut, on the other Kohanim, who did drink wine, he said that they practice like Rabbi, and that is the Halacha, like Rabbi, that Kohanim are allowed to drink wine. So as we noted in the Mishnah continues, Anshei Mishmar, Anshei Ma'amad, Asurim L'Saper U'L'Chabes. They're not allowed to get haircuts, and they're not allowed to launder their clothing. U'B'Chamishi, when it comes to the Thursday of the time that they're in the Mishmar, Mipnei Kvod HaShabbat, they're allowed. My time up. What's the reason that they can't launder and take care of things until Thursday? If they're preparing for the upcoming Shabbat, it's mutar on Thursday, why can't they do it earlier? Why is it that they're restricted until Thursday, and then Thursday becomes mutar? So I'm Rabbi Rechan, I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Kadeshali Kansu L'Mishmaratam K'shem Nuvalim. It's a similar logic that's given in the Gemara in Moed Katan with regards to Chol HaMoed. Why is it asur to do laundry at Chol HaMoed? Why is it asur to get a haircut and to possibly shave on Chol HaMoed? Is because we don't want you coming into the Chag while you're Nuval. This person who's coming up to Mishmar says, why am I going to take an extra day off before I come up to do all my laundry and to get my hair cut and to shave my beard before I come up? I'm going up there. I'm going to be up there the whole week. I may as well take one of the days that I'm up there and I'll take care of it then. So that person's going to show up in Nuval. He's going to show up in his dirty clothing. and his unkempt hair, and then he's going to get it taken care of once he's already there. And same thing with Chol HaMoed. We want you to do this before the Chag, not when you have time on Chol HaMoed. And therefore, we say it's also on Chol HaMoed, or it's also during the Mishmar, in order to encourage you to take care of these issues before you come up to Yerushalayim, so that you come up in your presentable state and you have a proper appearance and presentation when you come up to the Mikdash and you come up to Yerushalayim. Tanya Banan, Melech Mistaper B'chol Yom. A king should, as Rashi says, mitzvah, to take a haircut every day. Kohen Gadol Me'erev Shabbat L'Erev Shabbat. The Kohen Gadol should do that weekly. Kohen Hajot Achat L'Shloshim Yom, is once in every 30 days. Melech Mistaper B'chol Yom. A king gets a haircut every day. My time. What's the reasoning? Amar Rabbi Ava Bar Zavda Amar Kra. The pasuk says, "Melech biyofyo techezen einecha," that the beauty of the king, that your eyes should be whole. So there's this concept that the king should be beautiful, and the idea of being as the Meiri says over here, it's part of Morat Hamelech, that the king should hold a certain amount of sway and fear over his subjects. Part of that is his presentation, that he should always be in a full state of beautiful clothing and well-kept hair, and that presentation or that appearance will give a sense of royalty to this individual, and it will enhance his mora'ah, his ability to rule and to dictate to his subjects, because they're fearful of the king and his royalty, and therefore melech b'yofyo techezena einecha. It also is encouraging of individuals, meaning that when they have a representative, they want the representative to be someone who appears beautiful and strong and has the features that make them into royalty, because then a person's proud of who's representing them, and they are more likely to be tomech, to support and abide by the rulings of such a king. Kohen Gadol Me'erev Shabbat L'Erev Shabbat. Kohen Gadol is from week to week, he should get a haircut. Part of that is because, as the Rambam says, he's always found in the Mikdash. As opposed to the other Kohanim, which we're going to see in a second, that can only come on their Mishmarot, the Kohen Gadol is always present in Mikdash, and therefore he always needs to be in a presentable state. But my time, he needs to do it on a weekly basis, is Amar Rav Shmuel Bar Yitzchak, Ho Mishmarot Mitchadshot. Since every week the new Mishmar comes, the new Mishmar is coming to see the Kohen Gadol. He didn't see him last week, so even if he got his haircut last week, and now he's coming up this week, the Kohen Gadol needs to be presentable, just like the king, because he's the leader of the Kohanim. He is the Kohen Gadol. So his presentation when the new Mishmar comes up is important. And therefore he needs to make sure that he's ready when he comes up to Yerushalayim, the new Mishmar comes up to Yerushalayim, that he's in a state where he's going to be projecting that sense of being a Kohen Gadol, both in his beauty and his presentation. And it just reminds me of the story of Cal Ripken Jr., who held the record for most consecutive baseball games that he played in. And every time he would go out into the field, he used to run out to the field and get all excited, and like as if it was his first time going out to the field. And somebody, one reporter once asked him, why do you do that? He played the most games consecutively of anybody in the major leagues. And yet every time you go out, you look like it's the first time that you're going out. And so he answered, he says, because anytime I go out into the field, it may be the first time that some kid in the crowd is coming to a baseball game. And I should go out there looking like I've been doing this forever, and I'm tired, and I'm old, and it's not going to be exciting. No, for that child, it's the first time. He needs to see it as if it's an exciting new opportunity. And it just reminds me of this idea of the Kohen Gadol, that when the new Mishmar comes up, he has to be presentable, and he has to be ready, because those people haven't seen him before. Even though others have seen him, he has to present to each new group that comes up, and therefore he has to be appropriately presentable. Kohen Hajot, Achat L'Shloshim Yom, Kohen Hajot, is every 30 days, minolon. How do we know that? How do you know that they have to cut the hair every 30 days? Now, it would seem that this is only, according to most of the Rishonim, when he's coming up to do avod in the Mikdash. And if he's not coming up to do avod in the Mikdash, this restriction may not apply. That's at least the way the Rambam seems to view it. There are others like the Raivad, who we'll see later on, to suggest that it might be a more permanent requirement, or similar to the requirement of Yayin, where you have to be ready in anticipation, and therefore you may be called into duty, and therefore it should always be this way. But the reason that it is Achipera Pera Min Nazir. You have a Gzera Shava from Nazir to Kohen. K'tivacha, it says by the Kohanim in Sefer Yechezkel with regards to the rules of the Kohanim, Rosham Lo Yigalechu, they may not shave their heads, Upera Lo Yishalechu, but they also may not let the hair grow wild and let it become long. And as the Rabbeinu Chananel says over here, Lo Yishalechu means, Klomar, Lo Yarichu Se'ar Liot Mishaleach Lifnehem Ulachrehem. Their hair shouldn't get so long that it hangs off on the front and in the back. Meaning that Lo Yishalechu is like to send roots out, or to become wild. And so they shouldn't have a pera, a growth of hair, That is Yishalechu, that is wild. Uchtiv Hatam, and it says by the Nazir, Kadoshie, Gadel Pera, Sear Roshon. He's Kadosh, and he will grow out his hair, which is called the Gadel Pera, when he grows out his hair. Malahalan Shloshim, just like by a Nazir, the minimum Nizirut, and the standard Nizirut is 30 days. Afkan Shloshim, so too by the Kohen, it'll be 30 days. The Nazir Gufei Minolan, how do we know that the standard duration of a Nizirut is 30 days? Amar Rav Matna, Stam Nizirut Shloshim Yom, because the standard Nazirut is 30 days. We know, and how do we know that? Amakra, iyeh, that the Nazir, Kadosh, iyeh, iyeh, bigamatria, the numerical value of iyeh is tatin havi, is 30. And therefore, that's the standard or the minimum Nazirut. If you don't explicate otherwise, that's what a standard Nazirut is. And that's called Godel Pera. That means growing out your hair to be wild. So 30 days is called growing out your hair to be wild. And the Kohanim are Peralo Yishalechu. They can't grow their hair out to be a pera, and therefore they have to cut it back. Maybe this is what the Torah is saying. Lo lirbu klal, that they shouldn't grow it out at all. Pera lo yishalechu makes it sound like they can't grow their hair at all. Who says that it means they can't grow it beyond 30 days? Maybe it means that they can't grow it at all. So that's the way Rashi explains it over here, which is lo lirbu klal, istapru b'chol yom. They'll have to get a haircut every day. Tachimashmo, pera, dainu shloshim, lo yishalechu, that they shouldn't do this, ella yigalechu, but rather they should cut their hair. They should cut it on a regular basis. So Rashi says it's daily. The Balei HaTosafot are bothered by that because they say then if that's the case, what's the value of the pera pera? The Gzer Shava pera pera says 30 days. What's the relationship between the 30 days and getting cut every day? Meaning that if you say don't allow it to go to 30 days, Rashi says, okay, therefore cut it every day. There's a big gap between those two. And Maron Rerenschenberg points out, Rashi himself seems to be saying that 30 days is the cut-up and then saying every day, and he doesn't show you how to balance between those two. And there, Tavar Tosafot over here says, it's a day difference between these two opinions. The Gemara seems to suggest you could grow it out to 30 days, and then you must cut it. And then the Gemara is saying, how do you know you can grow it to 30 days? Maybe you can't reach a pera. And since you can't reach a pera, you have to stop at 29 days. And that's Rav Papa's question to Abaye. Amarle, so Abaye responds to Rav Papa, Iava katav lo yishalechu pera. If what the Navi Yecheskel had written was, they cannot grow out a pera, kidamart. Like what you said is correct. Because that would imply that they can't grow out till it reaches a pera. They have to stop it before it reaches a pera. Hashto dichtivu pera lo yishalechu, that they can't grow wild from a pera. That means pera lahavi, they are allowed to grow to a pera, which is 30 days. Shluchehu delo yishalchu. Beyond that, they're not allowed to extend. They're not allowed to go wild beyond that. And so up to 30 days is considered to be okay. After 30 days is problematic, and that's the explanation of this quasi-gzera shava from Torah to the Navi that tells us that 30 days is the limit for a Kohen Ediot. And this actually relates to the dinim of Avelut, which is the reason that one can't get a haircut when they're in Avel, is because the normal person gets a haircut once every 30 days. That's what you see here from a Kohen. That's considered to be presentable. That's considered to be something that makes a person into a kempt person. And therefore, in order to demonstrate that you're unkempt, a person would have to, at minimum, allow their hair to grow beyond 30 days. And that's why that's the minimum amount that one cannot get a haircut, b'shtemes rechodesh, even though you're not supposed to get a haircut the entire year for the loss of a parent. Nevertheless, if it becomes unwieldy, or people say that you look terrible, then you're allowed to possibly get a haircut to rectify that. But that has to be at minimum after 30 days, because before 30 days, there's no noticeable change within the individual that makes it clear that they're in avel or that they're unkempt. The Gemara says, Yachi afila idna nami. So just like we said before with regards to the wine, that has application even when the Beit HaMikdash is no longer extant, why don't we say the same thing with haircuts? That they should have to have their haircut ready and done every 30 days in order to be ready for their avoda in the Mikdash. When it says, Dumya d'shtriya yayin. Ma shtriya yayin bizman hazeh bizman biyah hu dasur. Just like by shtriya yayin, the only problem is when you actually enter the Mikdash and do avoda, that's why it's problematic there, and that's when there's a chiyuv mita associated with it. So too, with regards to the haircut, it's only a problem if you enter in the Mikdash. Shalom bizman biyah, if it's not when you're doing avoda, shari, you can drink wine, it's not a problem. Aval kanami, so too by the haircut. If you're not going in to do avoda, then the necessity to have your hair cut and ready is not a particular issue. And as we noted before, this is a machlok between the Rambam and the Ravid. In Hilchot Biyat HaMikdash, Perek Aleph Halacha Yud, the way the Rambam formulates this is, Kishem Shein Konim Musharim El Yayin El B'Shat Biyat HaMikdash, when they enter to do a vote in the Mikdash, Kachein Asurim Negdel Pera El B'Shat Biyat HaMikdash. only when they go to enter the Mikdash. When is that true? For Kohen Gadol, Asur LeGadol Pera, Ulikroa BeGadav LeOlam. He's restricted against doing that forever. That's what we noted before, that the Kohen Gadol is always on duty, and therefore always has to have his hair kempt. Shaharei Tamid Hu BeMikdash. He's always present at Mikdash. L'kach Marbo, Et Rosho Lo Yifra, UveGadav Lo Yifrom. That his hair may never be unkempt, and his clothing may never be rent. The Raivin on that says that the Shad Bi'ah that Rambam claims is that only when they enter the Mikdash is this a requirement on them. He says, Adonai Avraham Amar, Lete Lahai Klala. That principle is incorrect. Shafilu Shelo B'Shad Bi'ah Asur. Even when you're not entering the Mikdash, it's problematic. The Gadel Pera, to grow out your hair. Sherei Chayav Listaper Mishloshim Yom L'Shloshim Yom. The Kohen Gadol has an obligation to cut his hair every 30 days. Kirichtiv Ufera Lo Yishalechu, the pasuk that we quoted from Yechezkel. So the machloket here between the Rambam and the Raivad is how to read Zman Biyah in the Gemara. Does Zman Biyah mean at a time that the Mikdash is extant? That's the way the Raivad reads it. And therefore, any time it's extant, they have to have these requirements kept, even though they're not working actively in the Mikdash. Whereas the Rambam takes it very literally, that Zman Biyah means at the time they are entering in the Mikdash, that's an obligation.
Vatanya, Rabbi Omer, Omer ani kohanim asurim lishtot yayim leolam, v'mayaseh shetakanato kilkalato. So this is what we saw before by Rabbi. V'amar baye kiman shati ayid nakane chamro. Who do the Kohanim drink wine like today? Is Kirabi Michlau. From there you would infer that Rabbanan Asrei. The Rabbanan believed that it's Asur.
And as Rashi points out, you could have learnt this from the beginning of the bright that we saw before, which is the beginning of our sugya today. Mipnei ma'amru anshe mishmar mutarim lishtod yayin belelot. And that continues into the explanation of what is the obligations upon a Kohen who knows his Mishmar, or knows his Beit Av, and you could have learned from that that they disagree with Rabbi's position. So why does the Gemara bring it from a diuk out of Rabbi's position, from a Abaye's conclusion, that the Rabbanan argue? So Rashi just says it's a Lashon Ktzara, just a summary method for showing us that piece of information that the Rabbanan disagree, instead of quoting the whole beginning of the Braita. On the other hand, the Sfat Emet is Midayek from this, that the Braita before was not speaking about Bizman Azeh. That Braita was speaking about Bizman Beit HaMikdash. And then Rabbi's statement is a separate statement about Bizman HaZeh. And that's why the Gemara has to be Midayak out of Rabbi's position and not at the beginning of the Braita, because they're talking about two different time periods. The beginning of the Braita is speaking about Bizman Beit HaMikdash. Rabbi is speaking about Bizman HaZeh, since nobody knows today, or almost nobody knows today, that information. Therefore, everybody can drink wine. And then the Gemara is Midayak from that since Abaye concludes that that's according to Rabbi's position that the Kohanim drink, that the Rabbanan must argue, because we wouldn't have learned that from the beginning of the Braita. And the Sfat Emet says that's Miduyak in the Rambam, in Hilchot Bi'at HaMikdash, Perek Aleph Halacha Zayin, where the Rambam brings the entire beginning of the Braita, and then quotes Rabbi. And the Ravid is shocked about the Rambam's conclusion, because if we pass him like Rabbi, why are you bringing the beginning of the Braita? And the Sfat Emet says it's very easy to understand. The beginning of the Braita and the Rambam in Halacha Zayin is speaking about Bizman Beit HaMikdash, that there is an obligation, even on Kohanim, are not present to not drink wine when it is their Beit Av's opportunity to work. Or if he doesn't know his Beit Av, if he knows his Mishmar, when his Mishmar is working, not to drink wine. The Rabbi's conclusion is Bizman HaZeh. And that's a separate concluding statement that has nothing to do with the beginning of the Braita.
My time up. What's the reason the Rabbanan think it's Asur? Mishum Meheri Baneh Beit HaMikdash. Ubein HaKohen HaRoi LaVodah VeLekah. And we'll need Kohanim that are available to do Avodah. And they'll all be intoxicated, or those that are supposed to work will be intoxicated, and we won't have that possibility. So why don't we say the same thing with regards to haircutting, that they will not be on call or ready to go when the Beit HaMikdash is built, therefore they should have to keep their hair cropped at 30 days so they don't have this problem.
And the question is that Shema Yibana Beit HaMikdash, that today, when we have this chashash that the Beit HaMikdash may be rebuilt speedily in our time, and therefore you're going to be subject, either going to the Raivad, to the requirements that you keep your hair kempt, even though you may not have to do a vota immediately, or according to the Rambam, you may be in line to do a vota right away, and you're not going to be ready to do a vota because your hair is not kept properly. So therefore, why isn't there a restriction today, even though the Beit HaMikdash is not kayam?
Well, it says, he could get a haircut and then go in and do the avoda. We could rectify the problem very quickly. When it comes to intoxication, we could also fix the problem quickly. Efshar the Gani Porta, you could sleep a little bit, vayo, and then go in and do the avoda. The Rami Baraba, the Amar Rami Baraba, derech mil v'sheina koshu mefigim et hayayin. A sobering effect on the drinking of wine is walking a meal, Roman mile, b'shina koshu, or sleeping a little bit, that takes away the intoxication. Umar says, wait a minute, about that, lav mi itmar law, don't we have a qualification that I'm Rav Nachman, I'm Rav Avua, that's only lo shanu ak shishata shir revit. If you only drank a revit, a log of wine, then those things will sober up the individual. Shata yoter mi revit, he drank much more of that, he's much more intoxicated, koshikain shederach matri dato b'shina m'shachar to, then certainly walking will weigh him down and make him even more drunk, and sleeping will leave him in a stupor. And so therefore, he's not going to be ready to do avoda in the mikdash. So that's the distinction between them, that a haircut can be done before the person goes in and easily rectified, whereas if a person is intoxicated, we don't have an easy rectification of that. Rav Ashi, my Rav Ashi offers us a different distinction between them, which is shtui yayin, demachle avoda, gazru behu rabbonon. Shtui yayin who, if they go into avoda in the mikdash, their avoda will be mechulau. It'll be profaned. It doesn't work. First of all, they're going to be chayav mita for entering into the mikdash while they're intoxicated. And if they do the avoda, it'll be disqualified. So we're worried about the fact that if they rebuild the Beit HaMikdash and somebody who's intoxicated goes in, not only will it be chayav mita, bidei shemayim, but he also will be mechalel the avoda. That's not true. Purei Rosh, the lo machle avoda, lo gazru barabana. On the other hand, Purei Rosh, where they don't have that outcome, which is that they're also not allowed, as we'll see in a second, to go into the Mikdash with their hair unkempt and not cut because they're chayav mita bidei shemayim. Nevertheless, if they do avoda, it will not be machle avoda. It will not ruin the avoda that they do in the Mikdash, and it'll still be a qualified avoda. And so Tosfot over here asks, what do you mean? What are we worried about shtuya yayin hair cutting? What about the fact that all the kohanim are tmeim? They're tmeim eight, and they can't go into the Mikdash because they're tmeim eight, and they have to do azash shlishi and shvi'i. They have to get the sprinkling of the paraduma on the third and seventh day to become tahor. Nobody's going to be ready to go into the Mikdash on short notice. So Tosfot says, there we can rely on the principle of Tumah Hutra B'Tzibur, that when everybody is Tameh, there's a dispensation to do Avoda, even the Tumah. So there we can rely on that. But with intoxication and with regards to haircutting, those aren't things where we can count on any specific dispensation to allow them to do it. Meitavei, the Gemara says, is that really true, that there's such a distinction between Shtuya Yayin and Purei Rosh? Ve'elhein b'mita, who is subject to a mita b'dei shemaim, Shtuya Yayin, someone who works in the Mikdash intoxicated, Purei Rosh, someone comes in with the hair unkempt into the Mikdash and does avoda. Bishlama Shtuya Yayin behejuk tibuhu. When it comes to Shtuya Yayin, we know that the pasuk's explicit, which is Yayin v'sheichar al teisht, ata uvanecha v'lo tamutu. So it's clear there, lo tamutu means that if you're not intoxicated, you won't die. And the inverse of that is if you are intoxicated, you will die. Rashi points out that it's not yumat, that you have to put him to death, but lo tamutu, and therefore the mita here is a mita b'dei shemayim. In addition, the parshia there ends, v'avdil ben hakodesh ben hachol, which says that whatever restrictions were violated here are a distinction between that which is kodesh, holy, and that which is hachol, or that which is profaned. And therefore, someone who violates one of these restrictions, including being intoxicated, will profane the avoda. El puriyei rosh minolan. But when it comes to puriyei rosh, how do we have that din that it is a mita b'dei shemayim also? Dichtiv, v'rosham lo yigalechu. Upera lo yishalechu. They quote that pasuk from Yechezkel that we saw before, and then in addition to that, in the subsequent pasuk, it says k'tiv batrei, v'yayin lo yishtu kol kohen b'vuam el chatzer pnimit. They're not allowed to drink any wine. V'itkish purei rosh l'shtuya yayin. There's now a hekesh between being intoxicated and doing avoda and coming in unkempt without a haircut and doing avoda. Mashtu yayin b'mita, just like shtuya yayin, which we know from the Torah, or chayav bide, mita b'dei shemayim if they do avoda while they're intoxicated. A purei rosh b'mita, so too someone who is unkempt and doesn't have their hair cut in the proper way as a kohen hedyot, they're also subject to mita b'dei shemayim. Umina, so Gemara says, well, if you have that and you have a hekesh, then let's learn the next stage, which is imash tuya yayin to machle avoda, a purei rosh to machle avoda. Just like the shtuya yayin are profaning the avoda, so too someone who is unkempt and doesn't have their hair cut, they should also profane the avoda. Underlying question of the Gemara is a principle which is called, there's no such thing as a hekesh lemechza. You can't have a hekesh when you compare two items and say, oh, we'll only take this item and not that item. How do you know what to take? Therefore, it's either no hekesh or hekesh legamre. If you're going to have a hekesh legamre, then what it's true of shtuya yayin, which is number one, that it is chayav mita b'dei shemayim, and number two is that it's machle avoda, that it profanes the avoda, that should also be true when it comes to hair cutting. Now here in the Gemara, there's a big hullabaloo about what is the proper girsa over here. Many of the Rishonim, based on the Gemara and Sanhedrin, have a statement over here, which says kasho, that this is a strong question. This is very problematic. And that is the conclusion of the Gemara, that this is a problem that we have, that you can't make a hekesh the mechza. And therefore, how do you make such a distinction? But Rashi says, kasha lo garas. We don't put in that girsa of kasha. And even though, as you can see over here, that the marsha takes out the remaining girsa that we have here in parentheses, which Rashi seemingly keeps in based on what you see from Rashi's interpretation, which says, lo. Kit kish the mita hu de itkish. Volo achale avoda lo itkish. They do exactly what we think is problematic, and why the other Rishonim in the marsha thinks that this is the wrong girsa, which is, no, it's only a mechza, it's only a hekesh the mechza. The hekesh is good to teach you that there's mita b'dei shemaim, but the hekesh is not good enough to teach you that it's machle avoda. So now the question becomes why? And that might be what the next piece of the Gemara is about. Next piece of the Gemara might answer both questions depending on which way you, if you left it as a kasha, then the answer is the next Gemara. If you did what Rashi says, that there's a distinction and we don't do the full hekesh, that might be because of the upcoming Gemara, which is Amalei Ravina the Ravashi. Before Yechezkel showed up, how did they know this halacha? The halacha is only known from the time of the Navi Yechezkel, from the time of Matan Torah until Yechezkel. How did they know this information? So we didn't learn this din from Torah Moshe, and we only learned it out from the Navi. And as Rashi said in the Mishnah, Divrei Kabbalah is a reference to Navi when there's a tzivoy. And here's a tzivoy. In Yechezkel it says that anybody who is an uncircumcised individual or an uncircumcised heart, both of those people are precluded from doing avodah in the Mikdash. Before we had this pasuk in Yechezkel, how do we know that an arel basar and an arel lev, that a kohen who is uncircumcised, not because he doesn't believe in circumcision, but because his two older brothers passed away from having a circumcision, it's too dangerous for him, how do you know he's precluded from avodah? It's from this pasuk in Yechezkel that tells us that kol arel lev and arel basar can't come into the Mikdash to serve. So how am I coming out to Yechezkel man amra? Ela gemara gemira lo. It's a mesorah. Aloch and the Moshe Mitzinai, it's a mesorah. Va'ata Yechezkel va'asmecha akra. Then Yechezkel wrote it down when he put it into the pasuk. He took that which was an oral tradition and made it into a written tradition. Ha'chanami, so too in our case. Gemara gemira lo. Va'ata Yechezkel va'asmecha akra. Yechezkel came along and there was an oral tradition that when it comes to unkempt hair, not having a proper haircut, pera, that restriction of a kohen precludes them from doing avoda in the Mikdash. If they do avoda in the Mikdash, they're chayav mita b'dei shemayim, but it won't be machle avoda. That was the mesorah l'alacha Moshe Mitzinai. Along comes Yechezkel and puts a juxtaposition between not getting a haircut and shtu yayin to teach us that din. But since it was an oral tradition about what the din is, we don't have to take the full hekesh. And this will be the answer that Rashi was saying before, which is, yes, there is a hekesh to mechza here, because it's not the hekesh that's driving the limud. The hekesh is just an identifying factor that there was an oral tradition. The oral tradition defines what is the connection between these two. Yechezkel just brought it and wrote it down so that we have a scripture that tells us this information, but it's bound or governed by the original oral tradition. And the oral tradition was, ki gemira, halach lemita lachulei avodah lo gemira. So again, the Marshal takes this out of the Girsa. Depends if you had it up before. If you don't have it before, you have it here. But according to Rashi, you had it before. Maybe you don't have it over here. But it's the same idea, which is either this is the answer to the question. It's halach lemoshe misinai. Kasha, we had the question before about the juxtaposition. The answer is that it's really halach lemoshe misinai. Or according to Rashi's Girsa, that might be the answer. The hekesh works, but it's a hekesh that's not working with the regular rules of hekesh. It works based on an oral tradition. And the oral tradition defines over here that the hekesh is only relevant for the punishment, which is that just like an intoxicated individual who does a voda is chayav mita b'dei shemayim, so too someone who doesn't cut their hair and does a voda. Whereas when it comes to machle avoda, the havdil ben hakodesh ben hachol, which is shtui yayin, intoxicated person who feigns their avoda, that will only be true by shtui yayin. It will not be true by someone who doesn't have their hair cut. And that would be the distinction that we can make now between why one has to be careful about not drinking wine according to the Rabbanan, but not careful about getting a haircut, because a haircut is something that will not be machle avoda, and it's something that can be rectified quickly when the Beit HaMikdash is rebuilt. Shtui yayin is something that may not be able to be rectified quickly, and if it's not rectified, it becomes a serious issue, because if the person works while they're intoxicated, they will be machle avoda, they will profane the avoda. The Gevura Dari over here says, why is this even a solution to the problem? The whole problem here is that we need a kohen, according to Ravashi, that is ra'ui to do avoda. So what does it matter whether his avoda is profaned or not profaned, v'chatchila, neither of them are allowed to work, whether he's shtriya yayin or he's prurei rosh. So why is it that that makes a difference whether they're machle avoda or not? He answers that Rav Ashi was not worried about there being enough kohenim to do avoda. He was worried about the fact that in the excitement of the rebuilding the Beit HaMikdash, that all the kohenim would run to do the avoda, and those that are shtriya yayin and prurei rosh. And then the shtriya yayin will be a much more problematic if they participate in the rush to go in, because not only will they be chayav mitah, but they'll also ruin the avoda, as opposed to the Purei Rosh, who will be subject to Mita Bidei Shemayim, but at least they won't ruin the Avoda. All right, we're going to stop over here by the two dots before the wide lines on Yud Zayin Amud Bet.